Welcome to my last session of the conference, and I'm overwhelmed by the big response I'm getting. I was expecting to be like one of two people in the room together with the people from the AV team, so I'm very happy to see so many faces here. I will promise that we will get on time to the party, and if not, I will drive you personally there. Will take probably longer than with the buses. Anyway, my name is Michael Rees. I'm a program manager in the SQL Server Engine team. Today I'm going to talk about XQuery and XML in SQL Server 2000. This is a deep dive. So this is going to go into query plans, lots of performance evaluation, comparisons, lots of code, etc. However, I will start slowly with some best practices and some guidance, etc., so that even the people that might be starting out with XML might have some idea what to do. How many of you have been using XML in SQL Server? So, good. Okay. And another thing I have to mention is I've been doing XML in SQL Server since SQL Server 2000. I was hired originally as a first program manager to bring XML support to SQL Server. And that kind of has stuck with me ever since. I've been doing other stuff in between as well, of course. But so this is something that is very close to my heart. So what I would like to have you kind of take with is to understand when and how to use XML in SQL Server and understand and correct common performance problems with XML and XQuery and be able to basically optimize your XML to a certain extent. In addition, I will also show you some new things that we are working on that will come in a future release. I can't give you exactly the time frame yet, but I'm kind of happy to be able to show you a little bit more detail towards the end of the presentation. The session agenda is fully packed, so you will see that I first go over kind of the scenarios and when to store it, some design kind of considerations, then some general optimizations that will have an impact on how you actually manage your XML documents inside the database. Then I will go and talk about the XML data type methods, like query, value, etc., and how to use them the best. Then I will go and dive into the XQuery itself and show you some tips about how to write an XQuery expression that it actually will be efficiently make use of the indices, etc. Then I go and talk a little bit about the indices, how are they built up, what to understand about the index to make sure that you choose the right index. Then I will have some other interesting query optimization patterns that are around the XML context, but not necessarily tied to XML or to the XQuery aspects themselves. And then finally, I go into that future preview about selective XML indices. So let's now, since it's a deep dive, let's kit up and dive in and go and explore. So XML scenarios, as you probably all know yourself, are kind of can be categorized into three different scenarios. The first one is where XML is the lingua franca of data exchange, and so you basically want to be able to take XML that comes in over the wire, put it into the database, potentially relational, potentially in XML format, and then also take the data out and push it back into XML. That's probably the 60 to 80% use case. Another one is where you have documents in XML form that are not really shreddable into the relational format, and you basically want to store it as XML and then still query, etc., on it. And the third one is that you kind of want to use one of these NoSQL paradigms, meaning you want to have flexible modeling without like locking down your schema, etc. So you're going to use XML as a way of escaping out into this kind of open content model. And XML is very good at that because it gives you a self-describing extensible schema type model. You can define the data first and potentially add schema later. So in all of these three scenarios, you definitely transport XML, which is not the concern that I have today. You want to store it, which is my concern, and you do want to query it. And that's definitely also a concern of our presentation today. So now let's look at what, once we get XML, what should we do with it? So the first question that I normally ask myself is, does the XML fit the relational model? If it does, I probably should store it relationally and just see the XML as a transport format. If it does not fit the relational model, then the next question is, well, is it one of these newfangled, like, semi-structured things where I need to have some extensions to my relational model? If yes, I can shred the XML into relations that are the part that is structured. And the semi-structured aspect I can either store in an XML column or in one of the new sparse columns that we have introduced in SQL Server 2008. If they are non-sparse, basically I know that what might appear, then definitely sparse column is a good thing. In the other case, I basically go next and look at some other stuff, like is the data a document, like a Word document or some other XML document format or HTML or so. And if yes, then the next question is, do I query into my XML? Because if I don't, and I just store it as a blob and retrieve it as a blob, then obviously the most efficient way is storing it as a var binary max. If I want to query into it, then I should store it as XML. In that way, I basically get the query capabilities over it. And then I can use primary, secondary XML indices as needed to provide performance improvements. Now, another way to query into it is, if I know exactly what I have in there, I might want to promote the properties out into a relational column, maybe using a user-defined function, persisted, etc., so that I can use some interesting queries using those functions. Alternatively, in the future, you will be able to use the selective XML index to promote paths out into that index and then have your query expressions picking that up. So we'll see that later in the presentation. Next question is, do I also need to search onto the XML? And if the answer is yes, then you define a full text index. And the full text index has an XMLi filter, which allows you to index all text contents within elements and within attribute values without actually indexing things like the text themselves. Now, last question, is the XML constrained by a schema? And the answer is yes, then you can constrain it with an XML schema collection if you want to. There are some benefits and disadvantages to that that I will get into in a minute. So just as a recap, XML comes in, gets parsed, then basically gets stored in our XML data type. The internal format is a binary representation, so it's not the text itself, which gives us certain storage improvements if you give us a Unicode document. If you give us a UTF-8 encoded document, we will still compress it, but then since we store it UTF-16, it will be bigger again because of the double byte storage that we do. If you can or want to, you can add an XML schema collection that then adds validation. The validation will add additional type information into the document in that binary stored format, so it gives us different semantics on the data. I then can run XQueries on it. I can do updates using our DML extensions. And what happens actually is we are running the XQuery only partially over the binary blob. What we actually do is we then take the XML and transform it into an internal node table. Now, when I run the query over that node table, that's then certainly a relational query using relational operators underneath the covers. Now, I don't want to do that every time I run a query, so I might want to persist that node table as a primary XML index. And then I can define additional secondary indices on that to further improve the performance of my XQuery expressions. Now, in the future, we can also define a selective XML index that will get mapped into an internal white sparse table that then our XQueries will be algebraized against. And even here, we can define secondary indices on it, and you will see that towards the end of the presentation. And then you have the other OpenXML nodes method that gives us the ability to create row sets for XML to get back, and so on. So this is kind of the architecture. Now, general impacts. Concurrency control. You will get locks on both the XML data type and the relevant rows inside the indices. Now, an XML data type is one row in your base table, but it might be many rows inside your index. So what can happen is if you have a big document and lots of little documents, you might get into lock escalation issues. That suddenly, instead of having row locking in the index, you might be getting basically an index lock or table lock on that. So that means that you have to be, if you see that happen, haven't seen it happen often, but if it happens, that's one thing you have to watch out for. So snapshot isolation will reduce lock and lock contention in that case. If you are using bulk insert into the XML index. Since the primary XML index is an internal table, and that's the same for full text and spatial as well, bulk inserting might fill up the transaction log. So you need to kind of be careful about that. And the best is to delay the creation of the XML indexes and use a simple recovery model if that's a problem. Also, if you pre-allocate database files instead of dynamically growing it, then that helps with performance, and that's a general kind of proposal that you are probably known from other contexts as well. And, of course, placing the log on a different disk is as well. XML internally is stored as a var binary max at the storage engine level. So that means the in-row, out-of-row option that you have to decide where to put the blobs is also applicable to your XML data type. So you can use that as well, depending on the scenario. If you have a table that you have lots of relational data plus an XML column, and you often only query the relational data, you might want to have it out of row. Also, if you do cluster, so you have to have a primary clustered index on your table, and for if you have an XML index. Now, if you're not choosing your primary key that you cluster on in a increasing number, you might get insertion into the index in a nonlinear fashion because you might have now insertions in the middle. So if you use a GUID or if you use an actual value varchar or so as the primary key. So if you use an integer or big int identity column as a key, then you basically can work around that a bit. So these are the general kind of recommendations. Now let's look at some of the modeling recommendations. I've seen XML is very flexible. That is very good, but it's also very bad because it's very flexible. Lots of people model sometimes their data in weird ways. And some of what I'm going to tell you here are recommendations. Now some of these recommendations might be different in case to cases. So it's just for you to think about. So one question that I often get asked is, should I use element-centric versus attribute-centric? So element-centric is if my properties are represented as elements inside the entity elements, and otherwise I use attributes for those. The attributes are often giving me better performing queries. However, there's a little bit of an overhead when I parse it because there's an additional uniqueness check that the parser needs to do. And if I have like 10,000 attributes, then that's probably not going to be very efficient. Otherwise, nowadays, I think it's kind of, it depends really what you want to do here, what the structure is. One of my pet peeves is when people basically do very generic key value representations. So they have something like entity, name equals customer, property, name, type equals name, and then the value equals something else, yes? Yeah, I think we either fixed it or it was something about something that I'm going to talk about later. So if you can take that question towards the end, that would be good. So this is, of course, correct, but it's very verbose. And I would actually recommend people to use customer name Joe because that's what a flexible, extensible schema is all about. And there are only a few cases where I recommend using the other case when you basically have some generic kind of tool that you want to run over. By having specific names, your path expressions will be shorter. By having specific names, your path expression will do the filter. So you will be able to say slash customer slash name, which will be a much more selective path expression than saying entity slash property and then have some predicates on it. So it's kind of moving your query from the runtime into basically the compile time. Also, another thing is often people add wrapper elements around things. Wrapper elements are good if you either have a clear real-life object that represents that container, or you have properties on the container, like if you say how many orders they are or something like that. But if you just do it for visual pleasing, then you're just bloating your XML, in my opinion. So another question I get is, when should I use an XML schema? Well, you can query your data in SQL Server with XQuery regardless of whether you have a schema or not. So the schema is not required for querying. You can still use indices, etc., everything. However, if you don't have a schema, a string is always, your value is always an untyped string value. So you always have to do runtime conversions if you compare your untyped data against a number or so. So if you use a schema, you can say that this is an integer, or this is a double, or this is a datetime. So in that case, you basically get more semantics. However, if you don't have a schema, you don't have schema validation overhead, and you don't have cost of revalidating the schema if you do updates. The schema gives you structural information. It gives you constraints, of course, that will guarantee that the shape of the data looks like you're expecting it to be. And static typing can help you in terms of detecting cardinality and feasibility of expressions. We actually will do static optimizations if we think that you say slash A slash B, and we know that there is never a B in the document because it's actually only allowing Cs, then we will give you an error message at compile time. So you can go and fix your query. It also provides semantic information, like that we have the right atomic type for comparisons, etc. The methods that we have, most of you know them, is query method to create a new untyped XML column. The exist method, that is for us to do basically checks inside a where clause. The value method that extracts an XQuery value into a SQL value in type space. And there are certain constraints on that that you're probably all familiar with. And the notes method is kind of a way of mapping an XML document into multiple pointers into the XML document in a row set format, so you can then start basically shredding your XML into different row sets. An important aspect of that notes method is, if you look into the query plan, it will appear as a tabled valued function if there is no index present. And that will be interesting to see later. In addition, we have the ability to refer to SQL values using SQL column and SQL variable pseudo functions that allow us to tie things back into the XQuery context. So in this case, I use a variable in that predicate in the exist clause there, or I do, for example, a join between a table and my XML by doing an exist on the SQL column. So now let me introduce you to the demos that I'm going to use for now diving into my query performance. So I have a couple of databases created here. Some simple XML documents. Let's quickly take a look at how big they are. So I have here, I have here this complex DMV query here that allows me to look at some of the databases. So here's my XQuery optimization, my XQuery database, my first one. You will see that it has about 15 megs of data. Not very much, but good enough for my queries here. Now, I also have a database where I added what I call the primary index. And if I run this, you will notice, of course, it has the same data size as before, but now it also has an index. And you notice that the index is actually three times the size of your primary data. And I think this is one of the main drawbacks of our primary XML indexes. It indexes everything, so you can query whatever you want, and the index will be used. However, it will use lots of space. We had customers that had terabytes of XML documents, and of course they were not happy to have to like buy three times as much storage just to store the index. In addition, I also have another table. Here is my query optimization, my normal data, where I have a schema associated with it. You will notice that the schema here is twice as big with the schema data. In this case, it depends on the data. It can be smaller, it can be bigger. But the interesting part is now if I look at it on the typed one with where I have an index created, you will notice that the index is actually about the same size as the primary data. But again, still, it's a lot of data that I store inside the index. So keep that in mind towards the end. Here is a little bit more info about the data I have. So I basically have two tables, an XML document table that contains 20,000 documents, some small, some large, and a table with four rows of contact info that provide phone numbers, basically. So I will be using that in the remainder of my presentation for showing you for almost each one of the points I'm making a real-life example so you can see what the performance impact is. So the first thing I would like to look at is, how do we optimally make use of our methods? You can't believe how often I have seen people writing queries like this. I could retire if I got like $100 each time somebody sent me a query and say, I did it, why is it so slow? Well, the reason why this is so slow is that people are doing too many casts. So in this case, I say, I get a query, and then the result, and then I take that text result, cast it into a string, and then cast it into an integer. Well, how should I write this? Well, we have a value method that does extract data and gives you back the SQL type. So using the value method is going to be much more performant. Also, it gives us the right semantics, because in the first case, if I have something like an ampersand, then that, or a less than sign, that sign will get entitized, so I actually will have entitization issues with the data that I'm getting. While in the second case, I will actually get a less than sign or an ampersand back. Another thing that I have seen people do is, I use a notes method somewhere, and then I say query dot to give me a new XML instance of that thing, and then I do value method on it. Can anybody understand why you want to do the query dot there? Well, I don't, so I normally tell them to leave that out and just use the value method directly. So let me show you what performance impact that actually has. So in this case, I go and connect to my database without an index and without a schema. And here I have a couple of these examples. So this query basically does a few of these casts that I mentioned earlier, and it does a few of these queries.values that I mentioned earlier. And what it does here, it's a left outer join on the contact info where it basically compares the contact info and adds the phone number to it. Oops. So let me execute this query quickly. Also make sure that I have the query plan shown. That's this one here. And so let's run this. And you see, it's taking its while. It's probably about 10 seconds. So if I look at the message, we'll see that, indeed, the execution time is about 10 seconds. And the plan, if you want to really look at it, of course, is one of these typical plans that we don't want to see. So I do a zoom to fit. It's, you see how complex it is. If I zoom in here, let's see, 100% here, and I go over, close. You will notice it has this tabled valid function here because I don't have an index. So now let's go down and write the query as it should be. So in this case, I'm now writing just my value methods. And the rest of the query is the same. Now this query still doesn't have an index, so it will still take a while to execute. But you see that I'm already done after 3 seconds, or 3.7 seconds. So I already got an improvement by a factor of 3. Now, let's go and we can actually make this query faster, and I will show you later why we can make it faster. So again, keep that in mind, put that onto your stack, and see what we can do. And I'll switch back and show you the next trick. One thing that we did was that we did some optimizations around being able to optimize queries where value methods that operate on the same XML instance, if they are written next to each other inside the select statement, we actually can push them together into the processing and be better and more efficient. So simple path expressions that only use child and attribute accesses and do not contain wildcards, predicates, node tests, ordinals, etc., can make use of that. And the path expression needs to statically infer a singleton, which basically means that that's why I can leave the bracket one out. The singleton can be statically inferred from the document constraint and the XML schema collection on the XML data type, or because I have a relative path expression on a nodes method and I have a schema that, or an attribute that kind of makes it just a singleton. It, however, requires the XML index to be present. So let's look at that as well. I connect now to my database where I have a schema that tells me that I only have one first name and one last name. And also, I have an index, a primary XML index. So now I connect it to this. And now let me see, show you what happens if I, for example, don't have these value methods grouped with each other. So you see here, I basically go down into my customers and into my orders, and I extract information from my customers and my orders. But I kind of mix them, match them inside the select clause. So let me run this query. It's again taking a few seconds. So you can see it took me about 2 minutes, two seconds to compile. So it took me about 10 seconds to run. So now let me write the exact same query, but I group all the customer attributes and all the order attributes together inside my select clause. So I'm running this query now on the same data. And you will notice that I'm done now 30% faster. So indeed, there is a performance benefit by ordering them. Now, another thing that we want to do when we are using methods is to make sure that the methods don't get executed in the wrong context. So there is a very complex rule about using the right methods to join between XML documents or XML documents and relational data. You basically have two options. One is you do an exist clause inside the where clause, where you then put the relational value and do the join inside the XQuery context, or you use the value method to promote the XML data out into the relational context and do the join in the relational context. In some cases, the semantics will dictate what you want to do. In those cases where it's a semantical equivalent, you can use the exist method to get better performance if you have a secondary index present, because then the secondary index is actually much faster than promoting the things out and doing the join in the relational context. So in that case, if you have a secondary index present, it's better to not write value promotion and then do the join in relational. It's better to do an exist where you get the relational data in using SQL column. However, if you are not having a secondary index present, then using the value method is still often more performant. Another thing that you want to avoid is bad costing with the notes method. The notes method, as you have seen, is a table-valued function if I don't have an index. A table-valued function in T-SQL has a very bad cost estimation. It's always 10,000 rows. And we actually are a little bit more clever. We push the path. If you have path expressions that we push into the table-valued function, we actually do some adjustments. But it's just a very bad guess. So we want to use the better kind of way of getting the cardinality estimate. So it's not good to write this query, because in this case I probably only have one document and multiple customers, so it kind of gets a bad cardinality estimation. So if I only have one wrapper document and I know I only have one document element around, it's better to say doc one there, because if I have one inside my notes method, we actually will know that it's exactly one and we will give you a cardinality one, and then we get better cost estimations. This is very important sometimes if you do joins with relational data, because you might get much better join plan with your relational data than if you don't know what the cardinality is. Another way is if you do that with parameters in stored procedures where you don't have the ability to define an index, it might be better to use a temp table for storing the notes data before you do the join. Because once you have a temp table, the query optimizer actually can create a statistics over the temp table and it will give you a much better cardinality estimation for the join. Another thing is many people use subqueries in certain conditions like case or if null, etc. And of course, it's easy to write it like this. But every time now you're executing this value method, it will get executed. So there's no caching of results. So it's better to put that into a subquery and then execute the subquery at once. So let me show you that. Again. So I'm staying connected to my one database here. And here I have a query that basically just does some case statements to check whether some result is null and otherwise return a result. So if I run this, it will take a while again. So you will see here, it takes about 9 seconds. Now if I go and run the same query, but I have the select clause either in a with clause or in my case here in a subselect, and then I do the case statement in the select clause without calling into the value methods, then the query is done in less than 2 seconds. So there's a huge performance improvement by avoiding having these expressions executed multiple times. Same is with nullif. So now we have seen how to optimize with the methods. Now let's look in more into detail about what we do with XQuery. So XQuery is actually a query language that we compile at the same time that we compile your select statements. So if I have my SQL parser that looks at the select statement, it basically does the SQL, it does the parsing, it does some static typing, it does some algebraization and creates an algebra tree. When it sees that we are calling into one of the query methods, it will invoke the XQuery parser and do the same thing. It will do static typing, potentially using the schema collection if it's present. It does some algebraization, and then it combines the algebra trees together into one big tree, which is what you normally see if you look at the query plan. And then, of course, during the execution, we will use indices, etc., to then execute on that. So for the XQuery implementation, we added a few new operators, only a few, and basically used the standard relational query processor for the remainder of the processing. So for example, comparisons is using the same filters that you know from relational query processing. So the first one that we introduce is the tabled valued function, XML reader UDF with XPath filter. That's how it appears inside the tree. It's used if no XML index is present. And it basically creates that notable row set in the query flow that I've been talking about. If we have XPath filters, they can be pushed in to reduce the notable to a subtree. And that's why, for example, the value methods and so on, filtering and so on, that can all help us here. But the base cardinality estimate, as I mentioned, is always 10,000. And we are doing some adjustments. Here is the format that we are outputting. It's slightly simplified, but it's interesting because this is then basically the same format that we index with some slight adjustments around primary keys. So we have an ID which is giving us hierarchical information of where the node is. We have a tag ID, we have the node type, we have the node ID type, which type ID, which is like, is it a string, is it untyped, etc. The value, and an inverted path that points to the node. So if I have basically, the book containing sections containing a title, then the way that the HID encodes this is basically by saying I have a title inside a section inside a book. This gives us ability to further improve the queries if I have path expressions against data, because this will have a higher selectivity potentially than just title. Another thing that we added is we added a serializer that is primarily used if you basically construct XML back. We have an XQuery string and an XQuery data UDX that basically take user-defined extension or whatever it's called that evaluates that expression. And that's an important thing to know, because if you see these, there are optimization ways of getting rid of them. And I will show about talk about them in a minute. And then there's a check UDX that is used to validate inserted XML data to make sure that it's still valid according to the schema. These UDX's names are visible inside the property window and inside the plan, so you can actually look for them. So one thing that we often see is that XQuery has a little bit interesting semantics. any value comparison that XQuery does what's called atomization. So if I say slash A slash B slash predicate C equals 4, then the C is an element. So you basically have to unbox that element and look at the value. And that unboxing is called atomization in the XQuery environment. So if you look at this, the attribute gets unboxed to be the value of the attribute. That's done using the data function in XQuery, and that's basically for the standard comparison. If you have an atomic typed value, then we do the same thing. And that means you have to have a schema associated that tells me that H is atomically typed. Because if there is no schema, H can be of any arbitrary complex structure, so I don't know that. Now, if I don't know that it is H is a number or a string, then in that case, the data function actually gets translated into something which is the string function. Now, the string function is much more expensive because what it does is it goes to all the leaf nodes and does an aggregation over all these leaf nodes. Now, in the most of the cases, that aggregation will still be over one node, but it's still an operation that needs to get executed at runtime. So that's going to be costly. So if I know that there is exactly one element underneath, I should, in a SQL Server, I'm recommending to use the slash text method with the primary XML index or otherwise. Because in that case, I know there's only one text node, and so I don't have to do that aggregation. So that means if I have a value method on untyped elements, every value method will imply an atomization because I take the value out and cast it to the relational data type. So in this case, I am also better off by using slash text at the end. Because another negative thing is the string aggregation does not only do the aggregation, but because it's an aggregator, I cannot do any index lookup on the value because it's an operation that happens before I can look into the index. So let's take a look at this again on my demo here. So if I go up here, back, remember, we're popping off the stack here quickly. You remember this example here, where I was showing you how to do the value expression. Now I'm connected here to the untyped kind of column. And so if I execute this expression here, then I don't know that first name is just a singleton value that has exactly one element, a sub-value in it. So if I look at the plan after the query gets executed, you will notice that in that plan down here somewhere, you have the UDX here. And that UDX is that string UDX that does this aggregation. That also means that I'm not able to like use indices when I do a comparison on it. So now I have two ways of dealing with that. One way is that I basically put the slash text here, or the second way is I add add a schema to it. So let's look at the slash text first. And the slash text query is now done in like less than 3 seconds. And the execution plan gotten rid of the UDXs here. So it's very important. This is one of the most important optimizations in SQL Server 2005 to 2012 you can do. If you have element-centric leaf nodes, put slash text at the end to make sure that you're avoiding that UDX. Okay, so let's go back to the presentation and talk about some other things that we can do. So value comparisons often require cost and type promotion, especially if I don't have a schema. So for example, if I don't have a schema, I don't know what type H is. So it's a string with very weakly typed semantics so that it will behave the right way based on the other operand. So in this case, my compiler will recognize I'm comparing this against an integer value. So the semantics will be that decimal will that H will be treated as a decimal, and I will do a comparison that way. Now, if I have an untyped text node, the same thing happens. I basically cast it to a decimal. Now, casts are not cheap. They're not for free. And again, they might inhibit the use of indices. Another example is I have a typed element, but the element is typed as X as integer. But I compare it against the float. Now, XQuery does something that is called numeric type promotion, which means it takes the integer, turns it into a float, and does a floating point comparison. Very nice from a user point of view, has impact on your performance. So make sure that you're not comparing. In this case, I could have written 3,000, and it would not have done the cost. So casting is expensive and prohibits index lookup. And just to show you an example of that, I go back into my example document here. I have to scroll down again and show you some examples here. So in this case, I have a database without the schema but with my primary index. And what I do here is I search for all the documents where the year is equal to 2000. Now, in this case, I use 2000 as an integer. So that means that I'm actually going to cast my year value into integer at runtime. And I have an index present, so I should be able to make use of that index. I'm executing it, and as you can see, the execution time was about 400 milliseconds. And the plan is using the primary XML index. And you see, you see that there is a filter here. And the filter is actually doing a comparison here against the number, which then in SQL actually implies a SQL internal cost. So now I do the comparison with the string 2000. Because remember, the year attribute is untyped, so it's actually a string. So let's look at what happens here. Query plan kind of looks simpler, as you can see. Simpler as before, so it should also be faster. If I look at it, indeed, I'm twice as fast as I was before. Now, of course, this only works if the semantics is equivalent. So it works with equal here, but it doesn't work with greater than or less than. So there are some tips to avoid casting. We should use the appropriate type for the comparisons, string for untyped, and use schema to declare a type if I really need numeric or date-time semantics. Another thing is that single paths are more efficient than twig paths. And path, you remember I have that HID that gives me a path. The longer that path is that I can make use of in my query translation into that index lookup, the more efficient I am because I have higher, I only have to like look up less rows. Another thing that I want to do is I want to avoid predicates in the middle of the path expressions because they can be expensive because they lead to twig paths that I have to execute. So for example, if I have a query that has a predicate slash author another predicate, it might be better to basically do two queries that I then use an or an and in the relational context, potentially. Also, moving ordinals to the end of the path expressions can be more efficient because that way I only have to like do the top one once. However, we have to make sure that we get the same semantics. For example, the first B within the first A is not the same as the first B within an A if there are some A's that don't have B's. And of course, that's again not the same as the first B of every A. So you have to be very careful about how you map that. But in any case, an attribute is always one, so writing the first expression is always better than writing the second one. Another thing is I want to maximize my XPath expressions inside the exist clause. So if I do for a clause, so if I do, for example, a join lookup using the exist method with a primary secondary index, then the longer that expression is, the better. And I actually can use the context item in the predicate inside my expression to make the path longer. Because existential quantification of the exist method makes it irrelevant which node I find. So whether I find the node A that has a node B that is of value C, or if I find that B node that has the value C, it's the same semantically. So to show you an example, if I search for a book that has a subject with text equals security, that's the same as finding a book with a subject that has a text where the value is security. And the second one is going to be faster because I have a single path expression to evaluate instead of two path expressions. Again, the same is if I have, for example, comparisons like this, where I do a between, so the price is bigger than $9.99 and less than $49.99. It's easier to write it by having a single price where the value is between those values. In that case, I'm also going to save. Unfortunately, that later thing doesn't work with the OR predicate, but it works with AND. So let me show you that as well, switching back. So I'm jumping over this example here. And I show you the, this now in the context of a database where I have a schema associated with it, so my comparisons there with the numbers work well. And I have a primary XML index created. So first I run the query that you just have seen here with orders between the year 2000 and 2010. And you see the query is executed fairly quickly in 399 milliseconds. If I look at the execution plan, you will notice that, however, the execution plan does a couple of index lookups because it has to do it for each one of the paths. Now I go and run the same query, but this time I lengthened the path. So I'm now looking for the year attribute that has values between that. Remember, semantically the same as the first query. I'm running that, and now I'm getting down to basically almost half of the time, 250 milliseconds, and the execution plan looks much simpler. So again, cool thing to know to optimize your X query. Another thing is that you have to look out for inefficient path expressions. The most frequent offenders are parent access with nodes method. So in SQL Server 2000, a little bit of a history lesson here, we had OpenXML, and path expressions inside the with clause sucked, or in, so basically being able to go back. We fixed that in SQL Server 2005. Great. Everybody's happy. Except for, and I told my developer to watch out for, we implemented the nodes method with a similar semantics. And people would like to write what you see on the board with the parent axis. But we didn't optimize that. So this sucks again. However, there's an easier workaround than in the case of the OpenXML clause, which is that you do forward chaining. And the forward chaining is that you basically bind the row set to the parent, and then you do another cross-apply where you then go down into the subnodes. And remember that second cross-apply is relative to the first one, so you don't like put in the whole path. You just go relative to that node that you have bound to the first part of the expression. And then you just use these bound variables in the select clause to basically get the right value. And that's going to be performing much better, as I will show you right now. So here's one where I do some intrinsic parent axis navigation here. And if I execute this query, I'm in the wrong database here because I should be in the non-typed database because of that text node thing here. So if I execute that, you will see it takes a while. There should be all be taking around 10 to 15 seconds at most, I hope. So let's see. It was about 13 seconds. So now let's do the same. And I do forward chaining here. So I have two cross applies, one for the customer, one for the orders. And I use the corresponding variable binding. It's still going to take a while here because I don't have an index. And it is extracting lots of data here. But I'm now done in, like, about 8 seconds. So I go down from 13 seconds to 8 seconds. There are other things that you want to make sure. If you use XQuery, some other issues are around descendant accesses, like descendant or self or descendant. And if you have a // in the middle of a path expression. Because especially if you know what the structure is that you want to query into and you're just lazy. Like, you can put // at the beginning, you can be lazy there. We can cover that cost for you. But if you put it in the middle, then we kind of say, no, don't do that. If I have a query construction, so XQuery does construction, but we also have our 4XML class that does construction. And actually, using 4XML is often more efficient than using our XQuery construction. And I will show you an example in a minute. So instead of writing something like, create me one new customer element as a summary of my customer elements inside my database, it's better to use 4XML path for doing that. So let me show you that as well. So here is basically that summary of a customer that I was just saying, where I take the customer, I join it with my contacts info, add the phone number to it. When I run that, you will see that it starts streaming the XML out, but it's still running, and it's still running, and it's still running. And if I look at it, it's taking almost 10 seconds. Now I do the same, but what I do is I use my value methods to promote values out, and then I repackage it with 4XML into that same XML document that I had earlier. So I'm running this, and you again see we are streaming the result out because it's a 4XML without the type statement. And it's done after 6 seconds instead of 10 seconds. So again, something to know about. There are some more 4XML performance improvements that we can do. Now, let's look at XML indices. So far, I have just been doing primary XML index. When we create that, you can create secondary indices on tags and values. One thing to note is that the primary XML index is created single-threaded only. Secondary indices can be multi-threaded. Primary index will always be used if it's defined. So it's not a cost-based optimization decision. It's done by the algebraizer. The results can be served directly from the index, which is good. And the SQL cost-based optimizer will take a look at secondary indices if they are available, which then gives us additional performance improvements. So all the queries that you have seen, we can make go even faster by defining secondary indices on them. And I will show you that in a minute. If we do maintenance, primary and secondary indices will be efficiently maintained during updates. So it's not rewriting the whole XML. It's only rewriting the parts that are needed. However, indexes are never rebuilt online, unfortunately. And if I have a clustered key that is not inserted in order of the clustering, it might lead to nonlinear maintenance cost. So that's why I said at the beginning, make sure that your primary cluster key is taking some that into account. If I have schemas associated with it, the schema revalidation will always be done from top to bottom. So it will always revalidate the whole document. So this is an example of a document here. I assume I have a schema associated with it with some open content model. It has a book with an ISBN attribute, sections, titles, and some mixed content there. Nobody loves bad box. And all right-thinking love tree frogs. So if you're left-thinking, then I guess you don't. So if I create a primary XML index on that document, then I basically create this kind of index structure. If you look closely at it, it looks almost the same like the tabled valid function output, except for that it has an additional primary key column that allows us to tie us back to the primary table. Now, each node has a row. One thing that is, So the XID here is basically something that is interesting from the point of view that it actually is a hierarchical ID that allows us to cluster the data that belongs together. So each children are always clustered together with their parents. And it allows us to find descendants or a descendant subtree without having to do self-joins. It's only a scan over the index structure. Then the tag ID, node ID, type ID are the kind of information that you normally want to have. And then we have the value which contains the first 900 bytes of the value that we can index. We also have a large value column that if you're bigger than that. And you will notice some of them, these values are null. And then we have the, and that is because if I have a text node, then that's an individual node. And if I, for example, have the section element here that contains that text node, it actually does not contain that text node as a value there. And that's the reason why we have to do that string operation to basically, if I want to get the text value of that element, then I have to do the string aggregation below. In this case, however, the title element inside the section was typed as a string, so I could move the value directly into that row. So I didn't have to have a second row for the text node. So that means that I now, if I have a schema associated with it, I don't have to do this, aggregation. Or if I have an attribute where I always have a value, a single value, no complex substructure, again, I can pivot that value into the row, and so I have I can avoid that aggregation again. So once I define my primary index, I can define secondary indices. Again, the secondary indices are clustered on the primary key of the table and the XID, or that hierarchy ID that we saw earlier. So we have three non-clustered secondary indices types, and you can have several of those. The first one is the value index. The value index first looks at the value and the path, the HID, inverted path, plus the primary key XID. The property index is basically saying, I already know which primary key, which row I'm looking at, and within that row, I want to look at a certain property, which is the HID, so that's the path, and then I look at the value, and then I look at the XID. And the last one is the path ID. I basically index on the path. So depending on the queries that you want to use, you will actually use the right index. So let's switch back to my demo. There's some more sample code here that I will show you, or that I will hand out for people that are interested in, that shows some for XML stuff as well. But for sake of time, I can't go into that. So let's see here. What do I have here? Okay, here I have a query that does in my typed primary key that comparison. If I look at the result time, we'll see it was about 204 milliseconds. And the execution plan was going against my primary XML index. Now, I can, because I have a path here that is pretty long and descript, I can go and create a secondary index that is the path index. That's expressed with the four path at the end. So I execute that. It's going to take a little bit. Now I run this query again. Now you will see that the execution plan is using up here a secondary XML index, where it actually pushes that path expression in. So that was done cost-based. You will see if you can read at the bottom, sorry, I don't have Sumit installed on this laptop, unfortunately. You will see HID, scalar operator, and then that's kind of where it basically does that lookup. And it, since it includes the value, it also does the value comparison directly in that index lookup because it's a covering index. So if I look at now the execution time, remember it was about 200 milliseconds. Now I'm down to 109 milliseconds. So I'm much faster again by having used my secondary index. Now I can also create, I could create a property index, for example, and some other stuff and play around with it, etc. Now, the guidance that we have is the following. Primary XML index, you probably should use all the time if you have lots of XPath expressions, at least for now. Later, the guidance will become a little bit more complex once we have selective XML index, which will be much better in terms of size and performance for queries that you know that you will query. The value method is useful for queries where the values are more selective than the path. So, for example, if you find anything where the value is equal to Seattle, then probably Seattle is much more selective than the path that is //*. The path expression is most useful if you have path expressions that are pretty selective. So if you have things like person address SIP, that's very selective. If you have entity slash value, that's not going to be very selective. The property index is useful when the optimizer chooses other indices, for example, an existing full text index, or you already have a relational predicate, and so you already know the row, and then it's easier to kind of pre-select into that row. So these are kind of the takeaways for the secondary indices, and I think it's very useful to use them, because all the times that you have seen can be cut into half and sometimes more by using secondary indices, and you often can go into index 6 instead of index range lookups and stuff like that. Another thing that you can do is you can promote using computed columns. So you can use a schema-bound UDF that encapsulates the X query. You persist the computed column. You get fast lookup and retrieval, and then you can query it. However, there are some caveats. The first one is you will have to use the schema-bound UDF to query again to make sure that the optimizer can match it. So it will not match the content of the UDF. So it will not know that you used a certain X query expression and will automatically map that. Unfortunately, that's not how the query optimizer works. Also, there are no parallel plans. So sometimes you can benefit from having parallel plans with the other cases. In this case, apparently we are not using parallel plans. And that's a general restriction, not just for the XML stuff. So let me show you that quickly. Oops. Switch back here. So here we have the top five documents that we have, and we would like to basically extract the first name. So what I do is I create a function that basically gets the first name out of every one of my customers. So I execute that. And now I add a new persisted column here. And I create an index on that persisted column. Now, first, let's see what happens if I do a query here where I use my XQuery expression. Well, if I use my XQuery expression, unfortunately, I'm still using the primary XML index, and I'm not looking up the computed column. But if I use the same query and I use the function that I used, the execution plan is now doing a key lookup on that column, so it's not using a primary XML index anymore. And that's going to be much faster as well. Let me see if I... Yes. So let's go and show you the last aspect before we get into the new stuff. So another thing that you can do is you can use full text index for certain types of optimizations if you have XQuery contains queries that are doing like substring contains. So for example, if I look for a document that contains in the title the word optimization. Now, I can rewrite that by doing a full text query on optimization, assuming optimization, what I'm looking for is a token that is actually stored as a token inside full text search, and still use the secondary query. So what happens here is that the full text index will be used first. If I have a property index, then that will be used to help me look up and find that row more efficiently. And let me show you how that works. So first I need to add a property index. I think I have that one up here. I already have created a full text index, so I don't have to do that right now. And now I have here first a query without the full text expression. And you will see that in this case it's about a second execution time. And you see it actually uses the secondary index here. So it's not that it just uses the primary index. Now I add the contains on the snoozies here. And I run the query, and I get the same result back, hopefully. But now the query was executed in, what, 80 milliseconds? That's quite a bit of a performance improvement, isn't there? Okay, so I think you have seen until now what you can do in SQL Server 2005, 8, R2, and 12 by using indices and writing the queries well. I have worked with customers where we went by a factor of 100 or 1,000 faster than what their original query was, depending on how bad the original query were, by just using the right query expressions, using the right indices. However, the indices still add lots of space to your storage. And so we have taken the feedback into account and have worked on some cool new technology that we call selective XML indices. This is not yet shipping, and I hope it will be available within the next year. The code is done. It's just figuring out where we want to put it in, into what release. What we do here is we map specific XML nodes to a single wide relational table that kind of replaces that node table. Why a wide relational table? Well, by mapping a path into a column, we get much better statistics about each one of the paths. So that gives us much better query performance. Also, by doing that, we don't have to repeat all the node information on every level, so we basically compact what we store, also by you having the control over what you actually put into the index. This selective XML index will support all the query expressions inside the query methods and SQL comparison of the value methods. The decision is still not cost-based. The rule that I mentioned earlier gets slightly extended. The rule is if, at algebraization time, the XSI exists and it contains nodes from the X query expression, then I use the SXI. Otherwise, if a PSI exists, I use the PSI. Otherwise, I use my table valued function and scan. It's, again, like in the primary XML index, it's still single-threaded and offline. And the reason for that is that there are certain infrastructure issues that are kind of prohibiting us from doing that differently. And we can do secondary indices on top of it that will be basically filtered indices, and I will show you that as well. Now, what it's using underneath the covers is basically sparse columns and filtered indices for those that kind of know that technology. And, of course, it's supported in all our supportability environment in SSMS, SMO, as a new class of an index. This is how the index is going to look like. You're basically saying create selective XML index, blah, 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 blah. And then you have three ways or so to basically specify the path. The first thing you do is you give the path a name, because that name you will use when you create secondary indices. Then, in the simplest case, you basically just give you the path expression. That's useful if you have a default mapping. You're fine with basically storing it as an untyped atomic or as basically a weakly typed string in the index. There is no optimization hint, so we assume that there might be more than one B, there might be exactly one ATC, etc. Then I can add additional information to my X query. So I can say, well, I say as X query, and I give you an X query type that I want to store it as. Because I know that in my query, I will compare this to an XS string. So I can store it as a string or as a double. There's a quote missing there. And I might know that there's exactly one D within each B, so I can store it as a singleton. So I basically use even less space in the index. And if I have a string, normally a string can be arbitrary length, so it's varchar and varchar max. But I can say, well, I know it's never going to be longer than 25. So I can provide that as well, and then I can have more efficient in-row storage, for example, for the values. So these are the expressions that are going to get matched against your X query expression. Now, the value method moves the value out of the X query context into the SQL context. So if I do a comparison in the SQL context, I need to have SQL type semantics for my comparison, which means I have to have, for example, the right collation and things like that. So in that case, if I have an expression that I want to do a comparison in the value method with, I say as SQL, and then I give the SQL type as the indication. And the type there is mandatory, while in the XQuery case, it's not mandatory. It can be inferred from the schema, or it can be default mapped. So here's, again, max length, as what I already talked about. You can also indicate that you also want to only keep the information about whether a node exists or not in the index without keeping track of its value, which is interesting if you have these like twig type queries that you can see down there where you say, find me all the Ds inside Bs that also contain a C, in which case the C, I don't need to know the value, so I just keep ABC as a node. Or in the case where I do, give me all the B's where X equals 1 C's, I can also just keep the B's there as a node. I don't need to know anything else. And Singleton already mentioned. Secondary indices now then go and use the primary index, and you just give the list of names of the promoted, basically, paths that you want to have a secondary index created on. The index, what it does is, it's just putting an is-not-null filtered index on that column. So that gives me additional performance benefits when I look it up. As in the primary XML secondary index case, in that case, that index selection is, again, cost-based, done by the optimizer. So let me give you the final demo here. What I have over here now is the same data inside inside a database called SXI. And I also have PXI again to show you kind of the primary XML index. So the primary XML index here, as you can see, is 15 megabytes. Remember, 3 times as much for the index. This one here is, again, 15 megabytes, so it's the same size. I haven't created my secondary index yet. So now let's look first the text node impact here. So I connect to my SXI database, and I run this simple query here. Remember, I don't have an index yet. Where I do, where I get my values back, first name, last name, zip code, and I do a join between the ID attribute and the contact ID of my contact table. So I run this. Oops, I didn't turn on statistics, but you see it's about a second or so. Let's turn the statistics on here. Run it again. And you will see it's about, well, this time 2 seconds. And now I do the slash text trick, because it's untyped, so I'm going to get a little bit better. And if I do this, I'm done in about 1.4 seconds. So still not very good. Now let's create an SXI. So remember what I had? I have up here in these queries, I have a nodes method on the customer node, but I'm only interested in the presence or absence of the node. I have first name, last name, zip, and ID. And all of them are basically SQL parameters because they're all extracted using a value method. So what I do here is I first get the doc as a query node. Then I add my SQL ID, my first name, last name, and my SIP as SQLs. And I know that these are singletons because there are exactly always only one element in there. And so I create that index. Now first, let's see what that index did to my size. So I run my size analysis query again. And you will notice that my primary index in the SXI, or my XML index in the SXI here, is, in this case, much smaller. So it's like only 2 megabytes. And that's because there are lots of first name, last names inside my document. So let's go back and see what it does to my queries. So I run my query again. This time I run the query without the slash text. And the reason why I can run it without the slash text is because now I actually indexed it for that path expression. So now the query will be executing in less than a second. And of course, if I have secondary things on it, it will be even faster. So now, just to show you that if I let's just add the plan here quickly and run it again with the plan enabled. You will notice that now the plan has a selective XML index node here. And so let me now run the same query with the text thing here, which was previously the more efficient one. And we'll notice that, again, I'm going over 1 second. So this is not a query that got optimized by the selective XML index, if you look at it. Oh, no, actually it did. But it still had the text node here, so it actually was faster, faster without the text node. So finally, with the selective XML index, I can get rid of having to think about the slash text thing all the time. Just another example here, where I do an exist method. And in this case, I run order year equals 2000. The execution plan has not used the selective XML index. And that's because there is no index specified on that path. So let's create one. And you will notice you can have only one selective XML index on a table. So there's a message here that says, sorry, you can't do that. So in this release, what you can do is you can now do two things. One is you can drop the old one and create a new one, or you can alter the existing index and add this new path to the index. That it will just be added to the index. In this case, I'm lazy, so I just drop the index, create it again. Now I run the same query again with year 2000. And now you will notice that the selective XML index got chosen, and I'm actually going to be about faster again. So this is basically, to conclude, kind of what you have seen here. There are some example workloads that we have measured to show you what are some of the performance and perf and size reductions that we have achieved. So it depends a little bit on the type of data that you're storing and indexing and the type of queries. But it looks like in some cases, in the best cases, we are 100 to 200 times faster. In the worst case, we are maybe like 3-4 times as fast. So I think you have now learned when and how to use XML, how to use the methods, how to write your X queries, how to use your indexes, and make everything combined into an experience that gives you much better performance in your day-to-day XML job. I thank you very much for your attention. I will stay around a little bit longer for queries. I hope I deserve a 4 or a 5, and see you at the party. Thank you very much.